is Four State Focus. News Radio 930 WFMD talks to newsmakers throughout Frederick and surrounding counties.
And welcome to another weekend. We are in the midst of a summer here at WFMD and WFRE, always bringing the top newsmakers in to talk to you right here on the Four State Focus Show. And a real treat today, the president and CEO of No Person Left Behind. His name is Adam Kochlewski. I think I'm saying that right. He doesn't even know if he says his last name right. But nevertheless, so honored to have you in studio. And thank you so much for making time for us this weekend.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So you are obviously a combat vet. Thank you for your service. You did make a massive sacrifice, and I want to take people through your military career, because it's so brave what these men and women do that put on the military uniforms and just serve with no regard for their safety. They just want to protect our freedom, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But let's talk about No Person Left Behind. How long has this organization been in existence?
Sure. It started in 2004, and really through about 2008 was just a couple of guys taking, folks out hunting, primarily, completely self-funded, completely run off, books, no donations solicited or anything like that. And then the need kind of grew to where they'd started partnering with other nonprofits. So in 2008, they'd partnered with a couple of different groups, the PVA and Operation Second Chance, based down in Gaithersburg. Worked with those guys for a number of years. In 2016, decided that they wanted to have a little bit more independence and decided to file for their own 501c3 status. And so since 2016, have been their own entity, but been around since 2004.
And what the main mission, of course, you're welcoming heroes home through the outdoors. Is it therapeutic for men and women who have come home to be in the outdoors? What purpose does that serve?
Yeah, so that's a great question. On the surface, people think of us as a hunting and fishing organization. We've certainly grown to do a lot more activities, which we'll talk about here shortly, I assume. But it's never been about hunting or fishing or any of the other activities we're doing. It's trying to get these guys into an environment where they're able to connect with other disabled veterans going through some of the similar challenges, and ultimately building relationships up. We tend to try to work with veterans that maybe don't have a strong support network, and build relationships up with them so that they've always got somebody they can rely on and count on. And if times do get bad, they've got somebody they can call and they'll pick up.
The criticism from pundits on both sides of the aisle, and generally from pundits that don't identify with a certain political affiliation, is that the United States of America doesn't do enough for veterans. We don't take care of the people that are coming home. We don't pay attention to their needs. We know about the suicide rate. We know about the homeless rate for veterans. Can you dispel those myths, or can we do more? Your organization, there's a lot of organizations that care for vets, but we as a people, what should we be focusing on when vets come home?
Sure. So there's a bunch of challenges that veterans deal with coming home, and I think the military does the best it can to prepare veterans as they transition out of the military and into civilian life. The Department of Veterans Affairs has some good programs, some poorly run programs. And then I think there's certainly a number of different nonprofits out there, some doing great work, some struggling, but all of them, ultimately working to promote, positive outcomes for veterans. I think there's things that the government set up well to do, and there's some things that nonprofits are better at. And across the board, I would say that I think veterans are being taken care of, pretty well. Certainly, there's certainly room for improvement. I think we're all out there trying to do right for the guys that sacrifice so much.
Are you affected by, we have a talk show host at WFMD who talks about the checking in with the veteran and talks about the suicide rate openly and honestly every day. I mean, you must be affected by that. When I tell you 22 vets a day or something like that, some gaudy number like that, they're killing themselves, they're taking their own lives. Yeah. What does that mean to you as a vet?
You know, I've got a number of friends that I've lost to suicide. In fact, one of my best friends that I was stationed here in Frederick with, unfortunately, ended up committing suicide. He was my roommate for quite a while. You know, really close buddy. We lost touch, and just
Why is it happening so frequently?
You know, I don't know. It's a challenge. I think, you know, guys are not always well equipped when they transition out of the military, and you go from a certain lifestyle and having other people that have lived that lifestyle with you that you can identify with and talk to. And sometimes when you move back home, you lose that support network we were just talking about. Sometimes you struggle, to get things off your chest that, frankly, a lot of civilians might not understand, but veterans, tend to be able to relate to.
No Person Left Behind President CEO Adam Kochlewski talking to us. The four-state focus, very interesting. And the organization's mission through a variety of outdoor activities and outings is to build lasting relationships with those directly impacted by combat during the nation's armed conflicts. Very simple. How do veterans come into contact with you? What type of outreach do you do? Is there a liaison organization that reaches out on your behalf, or do you seek these people to bring them in?
Yeah, so we've got a partnership with a bunch of different organizations, and frequently we'll exchange veterans information back and forth upon the veterans' request. Working with other nonprofits is a big one. Working with the veterans themselves, frankly, I think probably about 80% of the folks that come through our program are referred to us from other veterans who benefited from our program. So we're pretty proud of that. A fairly significant portion of the remaining veterans come from outreach down at the hospitals. Just this morning, I was down at Walter Reed, so getting a chance to go down there, interact with the veterans that are coming through, either for routine care or maybe just transitioning, home from overseas. But across the board, we find a lot of veterans that way as well.
Take us inside Walter Reed. That's a fascinating kind of, I imagine, a fascinating scenario to be in. You're in front of people who are just coming home. What are they telling you?
Yeah, I think right now it's kind of a unique place in that, the conflicts have slowed down, so you don't see as many veterans coming home injured, from combat overseas. It's older guys like me who were injured, 17 years ago, that are getting older and dealing with the challenges of being blown up for 15, 17 years, trying to get routine care and stay healthy and active. So it's an interesting mix of older and younger veterans in there now, but always inspiring, seeing what guys are able to do and in spite of their injuries.
You laugh when you say that, and maybe you're so far removed away from it, and I don't know if you could remember it like it was yesterday, but somebody like me looking at you with such great admiration for what you do and the selfless service that you give to your community across the region every day. How did you come to terms with being blown up?
Yeah, it's one of those things. You definitely struggle with your identity, when you're a top tier athlete and, ready to take on virtually anybody at any time, to dealing with really significant, substantial, life changing injuries, and trying to find, a new identity after that is always a challenge. But the thing that has made it really possible for me was having such a strong, support network, people looking out for me and helping me find, a new purpose. And, in my case, that was, helping other veterans that have gone through, significant injuries themselves, showing them that, there are ways to continue to serve. There are ways to, continue to provide, some sort of meaningful, difference. And I think, people join the military because they want to provide some service, generally speaking. And to be in a position now where I can pay it forward is almost a moral obligation because of how many people have looked out for me.
Yeah.
And it's not it's not selfless. Honestly, I get more out of it than I ever put into it. It's just a really rewarding line of work, and I'm excited that I've had the opportunity to do this because of all the support that was shown to me and my family early on.
Yeah, you have an amazing outlook. He's an amazing person. He's joining us in studio today for State Focus Show. That is the show. I am Ryan Hedrick, your host, and Adam Kochlewski, I hope I'm saying that right, is joining us, the president and CEO of this fine organization, No Person Left Behind. So, you know, your career was really spurred by the horrific and maddening attacks. I get so pissed when I see these planes fly into these buildings every even 21 years later. I just get so angry that happened, yeah. In the subsequent response. But that's what spurred your military career.
To some extent. So certainly, I joined the Marine Corps in the delayed entry program my junior year of high school, just prior to the 9/11 attacks. So I was going into the military prior to any of that happening. Certainly, once that occurred, you know, I'd expedited my high school graduation. So I graduated in January of 2002 and was in boot camp by March of 2002.
And you were thinking what after you saw the planes fly into the buildings like everybody else, the crash in Pennsylvania, the crash into the Pentagon? What were your feelings? Because you were only in high school at the time.
You know, I think like all Americans, you know, you're angry and, you know, younger, dumber version of Adam, you know, wanting to take on, you know, the world and, you know, all of America's enemies was another moral obligation. You know, frankly, I just wanted to do my part and was equipped to do that at that time. I don't think, you know, I really had an appreciation for what I was you know, signing up for at
up
the
against.
Time that I did it.
Yeah
but, you know, certainly wouldn't have changed anything. Even now, having been blown up, you know, I'd go back and do it all over again.
So you have, you complete one tour, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to follow the Adam Kochlewski timeline. So you complete one tour and you go back for the second tour, and that's when you stepped on an IED?
No, so I was actually in I ended up in a different program that brought me to D.C., and I spent about a year there and then was up here at Camp David in the local area, which is what brought me to Frederick in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally in 2005, went down to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, where I deployed with 2nd Battalion, 2nd Marines. I was on my first deployment as an infantry squad leader, so leading a team of 14, you know, Marines. We were breaching a door in a school that we'd gotten into a gunfight at before. Another platoon a couple days later gotten into another gunfight there. We got intel that bad guys were back at that school again, and just going through door to door, kind of expecting somebody to be hiding behind one. When we came across a 155 round, which is a 97-pound artillery round, was jerry-rigged to the door. So when we breached the door, it exploded. It killed the lieutenant that was with me, James Cathy. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to make it out alive, but got pretty banged up. You know, ultimately ended up losing my my right leg, my left arm, almost lost my left leg, and a whole bunch of other injuries.
What did you feel when it exploded?
Pain. No.
Immediate pain, or
yeah,
did you go into shock?
I'm sure there was shock, which kept me you know, alive and conscious. And I stayed conscious all the way up until to the first surgery where they actually knocked me out. But it was one of those interesting, you know, feelings where you were coherent enough to kind of know what was going on and realize, you know, like, hey, I'm cold and I'm thirsty and, you know, the desert, like, this is not a great situation. You know, realizing that you could well be checking out is definitely an experience.
Were you okay with that? If you would have died, would you have been okay with life at that point?
Yeah, I think anybody going into the military, and certainly anybody in, you know, combat arms especially, has to be prepared, you know, for the fact that they may not come home. I was certainly in an okay mindset where if, you know, I'd given my life at that point, it would have been okay. Certainly, you know, I felt I was recently married. You know, I had a responsibility, you know, to my wife at that time too, and I felt like I'd, you know, let her down, you know, disappointed, you know, my team in some way too, because you've got, you know, responsibility to those guys as well as a leader. So you feel like you let people down, you know, in that regard. But you know, if I had passed away, I think I was prepared for that.
And you have, you said you were at Camp David, so you've protected the president.
Yep.
How is that?
It was a cool experience. again, I don't think as a young man you fully appreciate until afterward, but looking back on it, it was an awesome opportunity.
What a career you've had, and you're still young enough to do so much more, and that's it brings us back full circle to what you were saying about you getting so much out of giving back to, as the president of this organization. You must see people that come back and they have your mindset. They have the young Adam mindset. You must see broken people. You must see guys healing from all types of mental and emotional wounds. How does your experience in going through everything you've been through help you serve them better?
I think it's a relatable, you know, issue more than anything. And having, you know, gone through similar experiences, you know, you can get into their mindset a little bit easier than somebody who hasn't gone through it. So being able to talk, you know, to a veteran to veteran, or maybe, you know, combat guy to combat guy is, you know, definitely useful. But also, you know, severely injured, you know, is another component to that. And being able to relate to somebody and maybe help get them pointed in the right direction. You know, frankly, a lot of the guys that come through have a great mindset. And like I said, I generally get more out of it than I ever put into it. I come out of the hospital having interacted with these veterans. I feel recharged seeing, you know, what these guys are able to do and inspired. You know, but there are guys that, you know, are maybe struggling a little bit, and they're always good to work with and let them know, hey, life goes on. You know, whatever you enjoyed doing before doesn't necessarily mean you can't do that anymore. We may just need to find a new way for you to do that. And there's other guys that don't know what's available or possible. So being able to show them as well is always a neat treat.
Adam Kochlewski, he is an incredible man, an incredible leader, and he's the head of No Person Left Behind. And he literally almost made the ultimate sacrifice. He had his left arm and right leg amputated, and your left leg was badly damaged too. So we talk about mental illness, and we talk about guys that it's hard for them to come back when they come back. But somebody like you that's okay with all, and you have every right, every reason, I guess, to be angry. And I've seen guys angrier for less. Why are you not angry? What separates you from somebody that's struggling but has full range and limbs and everything like that?
Sure. I don't know. I've never particularly been an angry person to begin with. Just mostly because it's not a productive, you know, emotion, generally. You know, I was doing my job. I had a bad day and got injured doing it. But it could just as easily have been somebody in my charge. And I'm frankly glad, you know, that it happened to me as opposed to somebody that I had sent through that door. I think, you know, those circumstances, you know, could have made the emotional side of things, you know, much more difficult to deal with. You know, I'm able to live with the decisions that I made, you know, in combat, you know, and sometimes those decisions are tough, and sometimes they have, you know, consequences. And sometimes, you know, in the moment, you know, you're able to do things that you wouldn't think you could do. You know, and a lot of it's an age thing too. Being a soldier, Marine, you know, is a young man's sport. Certainly your mindset changes as you get older and you have more experiences, and, you know, you have children, you start valuing life different. I think I was very fortunate to dodge the PTSD, you know, issues that so many of our veterans face. I'm not really sure why that was, you know, but certainly grateful, because it's absolutely, you know, debilitating thing for a lot of guys.
I think God had a better purpose for you, you know, to lead other guys. I mean, this program does so much for people, and programs like this are so needed. And again, I'm a commentator. I'm a talk show host. I'm a host of a public affairs show and a weekly show, a daily show on WFMD. And I get angry, to be honest with you, when we don't give all our attention to veterans, because these people are responsible for our freedom, the freedom to speak out against anybody we want, the freedom to walk down the street, the freedom to wear jeans, because they banned jeans in North Korea, you know, so thank you for keeping our rights intact with that. But, you know, it's just an incredible story. So happy to share it with you. And we have about 5 more minutes, and I want to spend the 5 minutes focusing on the organization and drawing attention to the great work you do. Hunting, shooting, fishing, and again, this is a program that connects veterans to the outdoors. It's therapeutic, right?
Absolutely. And so we started as a hunting and fishing and shooting organization, but you know, one of the things that I took on when I became the president back in 2018 was expanding the program. Anybody that was involved in our program knew right away it wasn't about, you know, those activities. It was about, you know, connecting with veterans and, you know, finding something that they could be passionate about. And not every veteran that comes through the military is interested in hunting or fishing or shooting. So we wanted to expand our program to do more activities to try to connect with ultimately every veteran. So we've done things like horseback riding and whitewater rafting. Aviation's another big one. I'm a pilot too, thanks to a couple different organizations
nice.
Helped make that possible. I wanted to introduce veterans to flying and aviation. So
does that go over?
In terms of what?
Well, when you're introducing somebody to, I mean, I guess all the veterans that have come back and are now participating in the aviation,
sure,
have flown before. Yes,
so I think a good many of them have.
So are you teaching them to fly, or are they just riding in planes?
Mostly they're intro flights, so sometimes they'll get an opportunity to put their hands on the control and fly the aircraft a
nice.
Little bit.
Really cool.
With a helicopter, it's a little bit more of a challenge. They get to kind of fly along with them. But and airplanes, you know, certainly they get an opportunity to fly as well. We do bush plane adventures where they get to fly out to little private islands on the eastern shore land. They do some crabbing and some fishing, have a nice crab dinner, and then get back in the plane and fly home the same day. So it's just, you know, trying to open up new opportunities for these guys. I think the veterans, you know, respond really well to it. Sometimes the veterans' wives are a little less excited about them doing potentially dangerous activities. We've got hiking programs, so we've got plans in January of next year to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. So the board was very supportive of me getting to lead a team of a couple other amputees up Mount Kilimanjaro. So we'll climb up 19,400 feet.
Oh, wow. We've
got some training hikes out in Colorado next month to get used to the altitude.
So what comes after the outdoors? Because there's so much more to, and I don't know this, it's obviously not a rhetorical question, but there's so much more to this than just the outdoors. They need to, some veterans need to seek counseling and other services. So what is aftercare like, and how do you connect these people and make them whole and allow them to flourish in society like you hope they do?
Yeah, so I should be very clear. I mean, I think every veteran's got their own set of issues, and, you know, we're trying to take on one piece of the pie. I'm not at all suggesting that you know, our organization should replace therapy, but I think it works, you know, well in conjunction with. And mm-hmm. for some veterans, you know, maybe just going out and spending a day with, you know, other veterans facing similar challenges is enough. You know, sometimes guys have some physical issues that they're dealing with, and, you know, just getting them, you know, active and giving them a purpose is all they need. But I think as long as we continue to all work together, we're promoting, you know, the whole health of the veteran. That's really what we're trying to do.
No person left behind, and they're going to be active in Frederick. I guess you can't announce an event yet. We'll have you back, but you are trying to do some stuff in the area, right?
Yes, the organization's based in Mount Airy, Maryland. So we do stuff all across the the country, and I guess we're branching out to do things all across the world. Based right here in Frederick County, Maryland. We'll be doing a fundraiser in September out here. Certainly, I'll get you more details as they develop. But
And we'd love to have you on the morning show, on a daily morning show too.
That'd be great
to promote this. Yeah, No Person Left Behind, incredible leader, incredible person, and a hell of a hero. Adam Kishlevsky, thank you so much for joining us. If people in the next 30 seconds, people want to get in touch with No Person Left Behind and learn more about your organization, what can they do?
The best thing to do is just visit our website. It's NPLB, like No Person Left Behind, NPLBOutdoors.org.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. And thank you for the sacrifice that you did. And thank you for the honor that you're serving this organization with. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on. And, you know, like I said, I get more out of it than I ever put into it.
Absolutely.
So it's a great opportunity.
No Person Left Behind, a guest on the Four State Focus Show. We'll podcast this at WFMD.com. You could share it and get Adam's message out there. Get the organization's message out there. And let's welcome our heroes home with open arms. It is the Four State Focus Show right here on WFMD and WFRE. Have a blessed weekend.
Four State Focus has been a public service of News Radio 930 WFMD. Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.